Tom Homan says he wants to reduce the number of federal agents in Minnesota, but there's a catch. Amy Klobuchar has a plan to be the next governor of Minnesota, and she made it official today. And the Fargo Dome is looking for a plan to reverse a losing year in the business office. First step, trying to get more people in the door. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you here on another sunshiny day. Wow, we had clouds for like three straight weeks right after the holidays, and now we got a string of sunny days. It's a chilly one. At least it is here in Fargo where I am at today. Good morning to you, wherever you are at today. I assume that wherever you are at today, unless you are vacationing somewhere and listening on the mobile app, I'm assuming it's fairly cool where you are today as well. But as I say, man, we have light winds and sunshine. I can take just about whatever temp you want to throw our way. Well, Tom Homan tried to take the temperature down a little bit in Minneapolis just a few minutes ago. Had a chance to listen to his press conference today. That guy has got an amazing ability to thread the needle. He's a tough guy, talks tough when he needs to, but showed a human side today that I think was exactly what people in Minnesota needed to hear. And I wasn't laughing at that. It's got something caught in my throat here for a second. There's nobody laughing about what's going on in Minnesota right now. And he says he wants to get the number of federal agents down about 3,000. But it's going to take a few things from Minnesota coming back his way to make that happen. So a voice of reason, a voice of calm today. Going to play you. I wish I could play the whole thing because it was really good. About 35 minutes or so. But we will play part of that for you today. I think you'll know what I'm talking about. That it was probably just what the doctor ordered. We're going to get right to it today because we got a ton of stuff to get in here in the next couple of hours or so. So we are going to start with the almanac for today as we begin our Morning Wire daily rundown of all the key things happening here in our town, our city, our world, our state, and everywhere else. So let's get to it here, starting with the almanac for today. All right, we are going to begin with temperature averages and all those good things. Here for you, 19 the average high, 0 the average low, record high 52 back in 1931, and minus 36 the record low back in 1951. Sunrise in Fargo today, 7:55, and the sun will set at 5:25 Central Time. We will gain 2 minutes and 39 seconds of daylight today. CNBC reports that the markets today, as we opened up a new trading day about 40 minutes ago, dive in a little bit, especially on the NASDAQ side. There has been a little bit of a dive in Microsoft today, and that's got some traders a little spooked about some of the big tech names. So we're down about 1.5% on the NASDAQ, down 380 points today. S&P 500 is down 55. WTI crude oil took a big jump today. The president apparently talking tough about some strikes on Iran. And that's got oil markets bouncing higher, the whole supply-demand thing there. And oil up about $3 a barrel at $66.11 today. So those nice low $2.15 gas prices, looks like it's going to be a while till we see that change. We're going up, friends. We're going up. Gold today up. Gold and silver always up, it seems like. Gold up about 3.5%. Silver up almost 5%. Silver today, $118 an ounce. We just broke $100 like a week ago, and we're up another 20%. It's amazing what's happening on silver. And gold at $54.72 this morning. Yeah, it was a Bitcoin today down fairly big. People not convinced that the cryptocurrency is a way to go, down about $3,300 today, $85,867. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $2.87, North Dakota $2.52, South Dakota $2.60, Minnesota $2.64. In the news today, White House borders our Tom Homan, who was sent to Minnesota by the president, had a press conference this morning, a 7 o'clock press conference this morning, said after 2.5 good days, as he called them, of conversations with Tim Walz, Jacob Fry, and Keith Ellison, the attorney general there, a plan is in the works to reduce the number of federal agents in the area, but there has to be cooperation from local officials. He says, we want more access to the jails where we think the bad guys are hanging out so we don't have to go door to door to find them. I'm going to tell you more about this coming up because it is the story of the day. And you've heard all of the stories, you've heard all the reports, you've seen all of the fury and all the anger. And Tom Homan, speaking of drawing down, not just drawing down numbers, but drawing down the emotion today in that press conference, it was a masterful job. We'll play a few of the clips from that coming up in just a moment. Meanwhile, Pam Bondi, the U.S. Attorney General, said that 16 individuals were arrested just yesterday in Minnesota for assaulting law enforcement officers and impeding federal agents. So the beat goes on. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar made it official this morning. She is running for governor in Minnesota. 65-year-old Klobuchar has been serving as the senior senator from Minnesota since 2007. Prior to that, she was a Hennepin County attorney for a few years, starting back in 1998. When she won her seat in 2006, she became Minnesota's first woman elected to the U.S. Senate. If she is successful in running for governor, she will appoint a temporary senator to fill her seat. Speculation is it would be Tim Walz. If she does not win, well, she can just continue to be a U.S. senator. She does not have to resign from that position to run for governor. Her term does not end until 2031 because she just got reelected. The Forum reports today that the Fargo Dome lost $675,000 last year after a slow concert year. The stadium hosts NDSU football, but they attracted less than 380,000 attendees last year with 75 events. In 2024, they had about 480,000 attendees through 91 events, and they profited about $175,000 in 2024, but it was a big loss this past year for the Fargo Dome. They were projecting 415,000 attendees, and they came up about, looks like, 35,000 short of that. Interesting, because now they are hoping to be the site for a convention center, and they've had a 5-year winning streak of having profits up there. So my sense is I don't think people are going to hold it against them that they had one tough year there as they campaign to be the site for the Fargo Dome. I think there's a pretty good history there, but probably doesn't come at the greatest time for them either, I would say. WDAY Radio reports that a Colorado judge has dismissed a case involving North Dakota's Wonder Fund and Kevin O'Leary. The dismissal of charges included a with prejudice clause, meaning the action cannot be refiled with the court. O'Leary is the founder of the North Dakota Wonder Fund, the Shark Tank guy there. The lawsuit alleged that O'Leary and others defrauded investors. O'Leary, speaking with our Scott Hennen yesterday on The Flag, says this isn't the first time that he has been sued, but this one was completely meritless from the very beginning. So that's the story there. The Star Tribune reports that in the state of Minnesota, they have the second highest rate in the nation of violent injuries being inflicted on healthcare workers by the public. Every day, between 1 and 2 hospital employees are violently injured at work, so severely that they need to take time off or to heal. Many of them now are changing jobs entirely, according to new federal data there. About 1,070 workers in privately operated hospitals suffered violent injuries in 2023 and 2024, and that's the second highest rate in the country, according to Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's not a good statistic right there. North Dakota farmers continue to get better and better at doing what they do. Unfortunately, the prices aren't following along there. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's latest report, says Valley News Live, shows that corn farmers in particular did a good job last year. They harvested a record 711 million bushels last year, up 31% from the previous year. The average yield was 158 bushels an acre, and that was a significant improvement over 2024's 149 bushels an acre. Soybeans remain North Dakota's largest crop by acreage. Farmers harvested about 6.5 million acres and 224 million bushels. The crop yield was about 34.5 bushels an acre, down slightly from 37.5 the year before. Spring wheat production, 277 million bushels. And the yield there was about 55 bushels an acre. That was down a little bit from 2024, but the crop still remains a cornerstone of the state's ag economy. And those are some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Tuesday, this Thursday. When we come back, story of the day, Tom Homan was a steady and firm hand today, showing a heart for everybody. We'll talk about that and let you hear from him coming up next. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln and Wappen in 15 minutes or less. That's all it takes to sign the paperwork and drive out with a great set of wheels. Check them out at drivewithvision.com. If you want to give a call to the program today, I would love to hear from you on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, 701-271-1100. You can email studio at flagfamily.com or text me, 701-237-1590. Tom Homan held a early press conference today, a little 7 a.m. job down in the Twin Cities there, getting things going. I love it when members of the political establishment get going early, because a lot of us normal people have to do the same thing. So it's nice to see them do it once in a while, too. I took notes through the whole thing. Let me kind of hopefully boil this down to you in just a couple minutes or so of what Mr. Homan had to say today. He is Trump's border czar, and feeling like Bovino and Chrissy Noem weren't exactly hitting the target on the right messaging and the right sort of communication, setting the scene he sent Tom Homan in on Monday. Homan said today he's going to stay until the problem is gone. He's made great progress, though, with Tim Walz, Jacob Fry, and Keith Ellison, kind of the triumvirate there in the Twin Cities there. He said everybody agrees, all four of them agreed, the safety of the community is paramount, and that there's more that the cooperation that could be done about notifying ICE of criminal release dates from the county jails so that ICE can take custody. So it sounded like a little bit of new beachhead was reached there. Homan said, look, anything can happen on a street arrest. It's much safer for everybody if they can take custody people in the jail. That will require less officers to be there. And he said more agents in the jail means less agents in the street, and that will allow us to draw down the number of agents. So if you don't like that there's 3,000 agents, help us out and hand over some of these people and let us question them, and then we don't have to go door to door to find them after you release them. He said everybody agreed that ICE is a legitimate law enforcement agency and has a job to do. And then it got interesting. Not that it wasn't to begin with, but got even more interesting. He said, I don't want to hear that everything here has been done perfectly, and the mission will improve because of changes we're making internally. He said certain improvements can and should be made. Very interesting. But he said, make no mistake, we're not surrendering the president's mission here. And then he defended the agents. He said, you know what? These people are patriots. They put themselves on the line every day. These are mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, and they've seen some of the most horrible things you can ever see. They've seen kids drowning in the river, women being raped. They've seen horrible things. And he said, we have to stop the rhetoric that leads to the violence. He said, I said in March, if we don't turn down the rhetoric, there will be bloodshed. And I was right, but I wish I wasn't. He made a key point saying we are enforcing the exact same laws approved by Congress over the last six administrations. He said, if you don't like the laws, change the laws. And then he said another thing that will be very important in this conversation. He says, if agents violate approved protocols, they will be dealt with. We have standards. President Trump wants this fixed, and I'm going to fix it with everybody's help. He said a secure border saves lives. Then he took some questions from reporters there. A couple of takeaways there. He said our targeted operations that we have been doing from day one, may even years ago, that specific process of the targeting may have gotten away from us a little bit, or we may have gotten away from it a little bit, and we'll make sure that we do targeted operations going forward. We're not surrendering our mission. We're just going to do it smarter. Interesting piece that came next was Real America's Voice, which is one of the kind of alternative media sources that the president and the administration has begun allowing into these press conferences. Said, I want to thank you on behalf of the American people, and took a shot at the legacy media for ignoring the problem for so long. So that was interesting. Homan said he's aware of the signal chats and that there are people that are in high places that are apparently part of those signal chats directing where the resistance should go. He said, justice is coming. Justice is coming. He repeated that our priority is always violent criminals, but if you're here illegally, you're never off the table. And he said another thing really important. He said, the thing that scares me the most, and it should scare us all, there are 2 million gotaways that paid money to professional traffickers to sneak past the border and give up all the free stuff they were going to get. And he said, that should be very scary. And he said, finally, not going to comment on the shootings. I have an opinion, but I'm not going to share that. Okay, so I've got a couple of clips I want to play for you. This first one is about a minute or so. And he said, look, we are only doing the work that the laws on the books require us to do.
We're not making this up, folks. ICE is enforcing laws enacted by Congress. They're a federal statute. That said, I'm not here because of the federal government has carried this mission out perfectly. First thing I said to senior staff when I walked in here is what I told you earlier. I didn't come here looking for photo ops or headlines. I come here looking for solutions. I do not want to hear that everything that's been done here has been perfect. Nothing's ever perfect, and anything can be improved on. And what we've been working on is making this operation safer, more efficient, by the book. The mission is going to improve because of the changes we're making internally. No agency or organization is perfect. President Trump and I, along with others in the administration, have recognized that certain improvements could and should be made. That's exactly what I'm doing here.
And regarding some of the actions that have been taken so far by federal agents.
I'm not going to comment on any of these shootings. I said from day one, I said on any of these shootings, as a career law enforcement officer, we'll let the investigation roll out, let the investigation play out, and let it go where it goes. I'm not going to come out making any comments I think is right, wrong. Do I have an opinion? Yeah. My personal opinion, but I'm not going to share that with you. I'm going to tell you to let the investigation play out and see where it goes. But again, the president, one of the words he said to me when I came up here, he said he didn't want to see anybody die. The less interference, the less rhetoric, the less, you know, I have buried Border Patrol agents and I've buried ICE agents throughout my career. And the saddest thing I've ever done is help hold a hand a folded flag to a wife or a child. I don't want to see anybody die, even the people we're looking for. I don't want to see anybody die. And despite what people think of Tom Homan, I say a prayer every night that everybody goes home safe. This isn't good, but I think my conversations the last 2.5 days are leading us to a safer community, letting ICE officers operate in the safety and security of a jail more than on the street. I think anybody here with common sense would say it's safer to arrest a public safety threat in the safety and security of a jail. And let me tell you, what is that going to result in? Less collateral arrests. When we go find that bad guy, when we find that bad guy, many times it's with others. Well, guess what? They're in the country illegally. We're going to force immigration law. They're coming too. You want less collateral arrests? Let's in the jail.
Makes sense to me. So what do we make of the news coverage of all this? And are things changing? I've been watching CBS News, as you know. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Ike Walker, VP and General Manager of Valley News Live, will join me next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. At Capstone Classical Academy, they believe cultural renewal begins with education, forming wise and virtuous young men and women who love what's true, good, and beautiful, and you can support this effort. Go online right now to givingheartsday.org and search Capstone to make your tax-deductible gift for Giving Hearts Day. Capstone, rigorous academic studies with a Christian worldview. Well, we talk a lot on this program about not just the things in the news, but how the news is covered. And I'm pleased to have a good friend of mine in studio here to continue that conversation with you today. Ike Walker is the Vice President and General Manager at Valley News Live. And we have been glad to incorporate more of Valley News Live here and what we do at The Flag and WDAY Radio in recent days. And Ike's become a good friend over the years. And I like to have Ike in when there's just kind of a good conversation to be had about the news and how it's covered. So I appreciate you coming in. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Steve. Anything for a good partner.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Yeah. So I wanted to have you in. There's I think, a lot to talk about, obviously, because so much of what happens in the news can seem one way or the other, depending on who you listen to. And I've been watching this CBS story quite a bit, because I applaud people when they do things that are hard and that are kind of running counter to what the stream is or against the grain. And certainly it seems like CBS News is doing that and trying to kind of change its focus a little bit. So thanks for coming to talk a little bit about this. Let me start, Ike, if we could talk about the news coverage that we see in our country today. And I guess I'll kind of even refine that a little bit with what's happening in Minneapolis. There is a lot of conversation about the things that are happening, the protests, two shootings, and all of that. What do you make of the news of that and how it's being covered, both by, let's start here in our area, what we're seeing, and then broaden that out to what we're seeing in Minnesota and nationally as well? What strikes you about the coverage that you're seeing on this?
Well, you know, what's interesting, Steve, is, and we had this conversation at the station just the other day, and what's kind of gotten lost in all of this, and as horrifying as these images are, and obviously the shootings and everything else that's occurred, is this started with fraud. And that has now kind of gotten lost in the mix, you know, because there is these, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of, you know, other shiny object events that are happening. That you know, the media is now you know, drawn to, and you know, is really garnering a lot of attention. And I think it's the responsibility, and again, just my opinion, for news stations, for reporting outlets, to cover all of that, put it into proper perspective, but also don't forget all of the other things that are going on.
It's a great, you know, point.
Investigations, yeah, and things like that. We have to be able to, you know, to chew gum and walk at the same time, you know, as they say. And I think that that's fundamentally where a lot of, you know, folks who watch or listen to the news or, you know, maybe follow their, you know, favorite, you know, personality podcast or whatever, they're looking for kind of all of that. They're looking for all of that context. And, you know, I think that we as an industry need to get better at not losing sight of the things that make up an entire story. Because the story isn't just protests. The story isn't just ICE. The story isn't just the tragic, you know, shootings. The story isn't just fraud. It's all of it right now.
Yeah. So as you look at the major news coverage here, and I guess I'll kind of bring in CBS to this part of the conversation. Do you feel like there's more conversation going on within your industry on the TV news side about how we're covering news, and are we missing something? I think when Trump got elected, I think it was a shock to a lot of people who thought he was not electable, and that there weren't nearly enough people who maybe bristled at how the mainstream news had been covering things on the national level. Trump gets elected, and now I feel like everyone's going, oh, man, maybe there is a segment of America that we are not accurately serving or reflecting by the coverage that we've had. What have you seen with that coverage at a high level?
Yeah, you know, I think that there is that conversation is happening now. You know, I can't speak to the network level, and, you know, and although we're a CBS affiliate, you know, we're not part of those conversations, you know, right? We have conversations about how we, you know, cover things and how we, you know, deal with, you know, local and national stories. And just having those conversations about, okay, well, let's take a step back from where everybody thinks, you know, we should be taking the coverage. And let's focus on what the viewers and our users on our platforms are telling us that they want to know more about. And I think that there is a conversation now happening that, within the industry, that are we serving the folks that we rely on and rely on us. Are we serving them the way that they want to be served? Mm-hmm. Are we providing them with the information that they're actually looking for? And I think that, for the longest time, there was probably a segment of the industry that sat back and just kind of forgot who it was that they were talking to and forgot that, folks who rely on us for information are looking for certain segments of information. So therefore, we're just going to serve up what we think, that they want. And they forget that our viewers, our users, are customers.
Mm-hmm.
They're clients, and we have to be able to, service as many people as possible with the information that they're looking for.
How do you handle discussions in your newsroom about coverage of stories when you obviously have different opinions? You got people from different backgrounds. You probably have some people that are very liberal. You probably have some people that are very conservative. How do you talk to your team about, here's how we want to cover this, and here are the standards we have so that everybody can be on the same team, even though probably you have very different opinions within your newsroom?
That's a great question. That comes up all the time. And I'm obviously not on the news side much anymore, although, as my team knows, I'm always happy to throw my opinion in there. But what I always try to stress to them is, regardless of what the opinions are, left, right, whatever the case may be, what are the facts? Because facts don't care about opinions. Facts are just facts.
Mm-hmm.
And if we stick with the facts, you really can't go wrong. It's when coverage begins to veer one direction or another based on somebody's own set of personal beliefs or biases or anything of that nature, that's when things run off into the ditch. And if you stick to the facts of the story, regardless of how people view that story through their own personal lens, you can't go wrong.
Mm.
Now, I will also say that even if you have a story that's factually based, straight down the middle, you're always going to have folks on either side that are going to think that, well, that story is, it's biased, it leans one direction, it leans the other. There's not a lot that you can do to change that, because we all view things through our own personal lens, our own lens of experience.
Yeah. We all do that, right? I don't want to hear you talking about that because I don't like that story because it doesn't look good for my side.
Yeah.
And as a news guy, you got to say, sorry, I've got to tell this story because we can't cheer for one side or the other.
Confirmation bias is a real thing.
Mm.
It absolutely is. It's a real thing in every segment of life, even in our industry. But again, I go back to, the facts don't lie. The facts don't care about opinions. Mm. The facts have no biases. The facts are just facts.
Yeah.
And if you stick to those facts, then you're not going to go wrong.
And in this day and age, better than anybody else, it's not just what you put on your newscast, but what you put on your social media feed.
Absolutely.
What does your website look like? Like
absolutely.
I've said before, Star Tribune could have all kinds of content within their newspaper or on their website, but when I go to the front page or the homepage on StarTribune.com, it's clearly way left. Because of the choices of what they're putting. You've got someone who does an opinion piece on, I hate Donald Trump, and you see it three different places on the same screen if you scroll down, three times. So it's that, right? It's not just what you put in your newscast. In this day and age, it's a social media, it's a website, all of the kind of other pieces of the media go along to sort of help people decide what they think of your news operation.
I was actually having this a very similar conversation with some folks a couple of nights ago. And I urge them, find a source that you trust as much as you can. Listen to, the news, through that source. But do your own research. Don't just gravitate towards the sources that you have always gravitated towards, because that in and of itself can cause some of that some of that bias.
The echo chamber.
Right,
yeah.
Some of that echo chamber. Mm-hmm. You know, do your own research. Find reliable sources of information. Now, that can be difficult, especially in this day and age, because, you know, as you were saying, some people, that search function is social media, mm-hmm. and they might go directly to social media. I want to look up the latest on Tom Homan or, you know, ICE raids in Minnesota or whatever the case may be. And depending on where they land and how that headline is written or the comments that are associated with that story or that article, or even how it's written inside the article, or what's even left out, mm-hmm. that can dramatically shape somebody's opinion of a particular story. I think our industry in the news world, we have to be very, very, very careful to make sure that our information is, of course, accurate. We stick with the facts. At the same time, we are not unintentionally manipulating someone's own personal biases, because that can happen too.
Easily. Yeah, very easily. When we come back with Ike Walker, we're going to talk a little bit about what we're seeing on the local news scene. And have we seen more of kind of that tendency to give opinions and try to shade things one way or the other? Are we still doing pretty good in local news? And we're going to talk more about the CBS experiment. Barry Weiss is the new head of news at CBS, and she's being attacked from both sides. I'm not sure that's fair. That and more coming up next. Continuing our conversation with Ike Walker, Vice President, General Manager, Gray Media, Valley News Live, joining me here in studio today. Ike, I want to talk a little bit about what CBS News is doing. And when Tony DeCopel, the new anchor, and yes, I've practiced that name a few times, get that right. I'm like, do what? How? Came out and said, give us a chance. We're going to do it differently. I said, okay, I'll give everybody a shot, right? I'm a sinner saved by grace. I'll give somebody else a shot to change things
up. Absolutely.
I have been impressed. I have. If I am going to try to catch a nightly national newscast, Brett Baer's one is the best, in my opinion. It's so good, and it's so complete, and it's so down the middle to me. And then the panel comes in, then they give their opinions. But the news operating is really good there. Second best is CBS Evening News with Tony DeCopel. And he did a story like one of the first couple of days. They kind of did a humanizing story about Marco Rubio and all the jobs that he's doing in the administration. And they had a little fun with some of the memes that are going around about Marco wearing, you know, different jerseys and suits and whatever based on the job he's doing that day. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we would have never seen that before. But it's being fair. It is, okay, we had to say some stuff that's going to rip Trump today because that's our job in some ways. But we're not trying to roast him at the stake here either. And here's some ways we're doing it. And I've heard that CBS, the numbers haven't been great since they did that. I don't know if that's true or not, because I saw like a week ago that the numbers for one of the newscasts were really good, like their highest in 4 years. So how is CBS doing on its national side of things? And do you like what you're seeing from that effort on CBS?
You know, anything takes time, right? You know, and I will tell you, they're certainly trying, you know, and they're doing some things that, yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, that's fresh. Let's see how things continue. Certainly getting an A for effort, you know, kind of situation. You know, I think that the way they are being judged, and really the way anybody is judged these days, is really through the individual lens, personality that the user or viewer sees that particular story through. And there are people that are going to really like what they're doing. There's people that really hate what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know, honestly, Steve, how you get past that, especially where we are as a country.
It's just going to take time, like you said, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the only thing, I think, at this point that will work, time and consistency, doing the same thing, you know, over and over and over again.
Because the initial firestorm on social media, and again, CBS operates, sorry, I don't mean any offense here, but on the national scene, CBS News operates in this kind of whole paradigm of liberal big news legacy media, And so all of the other cronies in that circle are turning on them. It's turning into a firing squad that you're turning your back on what we do here. I think that's a lot of it. I think if they just stay the course on this and keep doing what they're doing, like I saw DeCoppola's interview with Trump, that was not a softball interview. It was well done. It was some tough questions. And he went after Trump a couple of times on things. Trump didn't like it. But you know what? That's our job on as reporters sometimes, too. So, but you're going to get that initial wave of fury, right? And that'll die down after a while. And sooner or later, I think the product is going to win if it's good.
Yeah, you know, and there will always be those extremes, right? There will be people that will see that interview, and they'll be mad that Tony threw him softball questions, didn't go after the president hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
Then there will be people on the other side that will say he was way too hard on the president.
Right.
Why was this allowed, CBS? You know, I tell our staff all the time that in the world of journalism, your job is to be obviously down the middle. But our job is to be equal opportunity offenders.
Mm.
In a perfect world, 50% of folks would love our stories. 50% would hate them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that unfortunately, that's kind of where we are.
Yeah,
makes
sense.
Right?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then okay, maybe we've done our job.
Yeah.
You know, because we're getting people to think.
Yeah.
You know, is that what CBS is doing? I think that they're closer than anybody has ever been before on a national scale.
I've only got about a minute left, but how are we doing locally? Are we keeping the bias out? Are we a 50-50 offenders with our local media around here? Are we doing okay?
You know, I would like to think we are. I think that local media, there's still a lot of strength in local journalism because a lot of folks who rely on good journalism, they're turning locally to get that now more than ever. And locally here in the Fargo-Moorhead market, we really are. The same rules of engagement apply, for not only us as journalists, but also even as viewers and users, you know, how they're consuming news.
Mm.
But, our job is to not think so much about what they're doing at the national level and focus on the stuff that matters here at home.
Yeah.
And
but you can't ignore this, some of this stuff either, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
Got to do a little bit.
But we also at the same time have to, you know, take pride in what we do here locally and make sure that we're doing the best job that we can for our customers.
All right. Well, you can catch Ike and the team. Give us a rundown again. What newscast do you do every day?
We are on the air from 4:30 in the morning through till about 10:30 at night, not only on air, but also on streaming. So,
okay.
And Watch the Wild coming up this tonight,
all
actually,
right,
on CBS.
Key 3 coming up next. We are going to do two qualifiers today for the great contest we got going on Valentine's Day in Vegas. So we got behind by one today. So we're going to get two out. So right now, let's see, we're going to call this 10:07, Addison, will be our clock start here. So Thomas Miller of Dilworth and Dewey Magnuson of Valley City. You have 11 minutes, so 10:18 will be the cutoff for you. 701-271-1100 for the Valentine's Day in Vegas promotion that we are doing. Trip to Vegas, you get the plane tickets, hotel, spending money, and you get to go see the Wizard of Oz at the Sphere on Valentine's Day. Big party next Tuesday at the Kingpins site there in South Fargo. And we'll be doing our big drawing party there. And we want to say thank you to All Sager Meats for being the presenting sponsor of Valentine's Day in Vegas. AllSagerMeats.com, 4 locations around the region, 2 of them here in the metro, 1 in Breckenridge, 1 in Audubon as well, over on the Minnesota side. And they've now got great pizzas. In addition to those great steaks and chops and roasts, chicken breasts, they've got the All Sager Carnivore all-meat pizza, the Creamy Chicken Alfredo pizza, the Pepperoni Classic, and the Signature Supreme. All Sager Meats, allsagermeats.com. Much more fun to go there in person. So, Thomas Miller of Dilworth and Dewey Magnuson of Valley City. Hop on the phone at 271-1100. If you've not registered yet, please do that at am1100theflag.com, and you might hear your name called here on the Steve Hallstrom Show as well. All right, 8 past the hour here, and it is time for us to give you the key three. And these are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. These are stories that rise above the pablum and the noise and the normal news cycle where I say, whoa, I think that's significant. There's something big here that you should know about. And so these are three that I believe pass that so what test. Story number one, Tom Homan said, I'm not going to say that we are perfect and how we have handled this operation has not been perfect. Everything here has not been done perfectly. We just want to make it more safe and efficient. He said that this morning. First time we've heard anyone from the administration admit any wrongdoing or any mistakes made in the ICE operations that have happened here since January started. Homan met reporters today and said there is a plan in the works to reduce the number of federal agents in the area, but the drawdown would require cooperation from local officials. He said he's had good meetings with Tim Walz, Jacob Fry, Keith Ellison. He said they have agreed to try to make things easier for us to question people who are in jail rather than let them out and not notify ICE of that they have them, and so they've got to go door-to-door more often. He said that would allow us to draw down the number of people there. He definitely humanized the ICE workers, which I think was really important for him to do that, said these people have seen horrible things in their lives, the abuse, the trafficking, kids drowning in the river. They are mothers and fathers, moms and dads, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, and we've got to turn down the rhetoric. He said, I knew that we would have bloodshed if we saw the rhetoric continue. He said, sadly, I was right. So a lot of good stuff coming from Tom Homan today. And one other note I'll pass along that I thought was interesting. He was asked about the Signal chats and some of these high-ranking Minnesota names that are apparently part of that. And he said, justice is coming. Justice is coming. So good stuff there from Tom Homan today. That's story number one. Story number two, Senator Amy Klobuchar hopes to be the next governor of the state of Minnesota. She is 65 years of age. This is sort of a poorly kept secret. It had been rumored for quite some time. And she officially announced this morning that she is going to be going for the gig. She's serving her fourth term in the Senate right now. Was elected first in 2006. If she wins the governor's race, she will appoint a temporary senator to fill her seat for the remaining, well, darn near 5 years. If unsuccessful, she would be able to retain her U.S. Senate seat because her term doesn't end until 2031. We will dive into Senator Klobuchar more in the days ahead. I will just tell you my main observation from her is that she is as liberal as just about anybody, but because she speaks in very mild-mannered tones, even keel, people say she's a moderate. She's not a moderate. She just speaks in a way that makes you think she's reasonable. But look at her ideas. She was one of the first people to get behind AOC's Green New Deal. Go look it up. I remember reporting on that when I was doing the morning show. So Amy Klobuchar will be the governor's candidate on the Democrat side. On the Republican side, you got Mike Lindell, Lisa Daymuth, Kristen Robbins, Kendall Qual, Scott Jensen, Chris Maddow's dropping out. And then from the Independence Party, Mike Newcomb is also running. Primary will be August 11th in Minnesota. That should be interesting. And finally, President Trump yesterday, just after we finished our program, introduced the concept of Trump accounts, formerly known as 530A accounts. And these were established under One Big Beautiful Bill, and the president made this official yesterday, outlined his plan for a tax-advantaged custodial investment account to help American kids build long-term wealth. I've got seven key points on how this works. I'll hustle through them best I can. Every American child born between January 1 of this year, so those that have been born already, and December 31st of 2028, is eligible for a one-time $100,000 contribution to get the account started. That money will be coming from the federal government. As you might suspect, I have major concerns, but it's not as bad as some things I've heard, but we still have a debt to attend to. Anyway, the program aims to jumpstart the account so you get that compound growth of interest from birth. Point number two, Any U.S. citizen under the age of 18 with a Social Security number can have a Trump account. Unlike traditional IRAs, you don't have to earn any money, so you don't have to have a job or anything like that. Point number three, flexible contribution sources. You can fund them by parents and family. They can put up to $5,000 a year in there. Companies can contribute up to $2,500 a year for employees' kids. And nonprofits and state governments can also contribute. These often do not count against the $5,000 annual limit. Point number four, limited investment options. To minimize risk and keep costs low, investments are restricted to low-cost index funds or ETFs, that track exchange-traded funds, that track major U.S. stock indexes, indices like the S&P 500. There are some rules for how much expense can be assessed to them for people to manage the accounts as well. Number five, tax-deferred growth. The accounts are like a traditional IRA where you put your contributions in with after-tax dollars, so you don't get the immediate benefit like you do in your own 401k, but the investments grow tax-deferred. That means you don't pay taxes on dividends or gains every year, and that lets the balance compound over decades. Withdrawal restrictions, well, there are a couple. Funds are basically locked during the child's 0 to 18 years of age escalation there. Before 18, you cannot do any withdrawals. At age 18, the account must be converted to a traditional IRA. And once the kid turns 18, funds can be used for American Dream milestones like higher ed or first-time home purchases, subject to standard IRA withdrawal rules. And finally, it's managed via One Big Beautiful Portal. The Treasury Department is launching a centralized online portal where parents can open and manage these accounts. Families can also opt in by checking a box on their federal returns. Okay, got about 30 seconds left in this segment, so I'll just tell you, I like this better than a lot of things. I wish we could do something like this with Social Security and allow me to invest my Social Security, Medicare dollars, which we can't do. So I love the spirit. I do. But we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars of money that the government is giving out. And if I'm going to be critical of Joe Biden and all of his giveaways playing Santa Claus, I have to say the same thing here. Even though I like the fact that it's getting people to think about investing, it automatically converts to an IRA, so this could be good. It should be a big boost for the stock market as well. I just feel like we have so much to tackle with our national debt already, and we're basically making it harder for us to make a dent in that. So let's take care of first things first. Then we've got all kinds of opportunities to do things like this. That's how I see it. You may have a different perspective, but anyway, that's how I see it. But give the president credit. He's trying, man. He is trying to do a whole bunch of things and get people at least thinking about the right thing. So not all bad there. All right, when we come back on the program, the story of Lucy, who says, I was a brainwashed climate activist until it didn't make sense to me anymore. I wonder how many Lucys are out there. You're going to hear from her when we come back. It's the best thing I heard all day. I like to be a little careful talking about family business on the radio, but I think it's only fair, acceptable, probably good to mention to you. Keep Alex Taylor and her family in your prayers today, if you would. The funeral for Alex's dad is today coming up, and died unexpectedly over the weekend. And so it's been a difficult week for Alex. She's been a trooper, been here doing the show most days. But the funeral is today at 11 a.m. So keep them in your prayers, if you would, today for Miss Alex and their family. All right, we have Best Thing I Heard All Day. And you change gears. We've talked a lot about, you know, North Dakota issues and Minnesota, crime, ICE, and all that. We should never forget how crazy this whole climate conversation has been. And I saw and heard something yesterday that was the best thing I heard all day. This is a story of Lucy. She said, you know, I used to be one of those people when I was in my 20s, climate activist. And then I grew up a little bit and started thinking a little bit more and Well, here's her story.
I think I need to do a little reintroduction for people on here who I am. So I'm Lucy Biggers. Right now I'm the head of social media for the Free Press. But for 5 years of my 20s, I was a climate activist. I interviewed Greta Thunberg. I've interviewed AOC. I pushed ideas like the Green New Deal, plastic straw bans, plastic bag bans, anything you could think of that is like the typical climate activist. I pushed those things for half my 20s. In that time, I got a lot of value from being part of the group. I identified as a climate activist, and I thought I was on the right side of history and that these ideas were so important to push. Even during the time when I was really deep in the climate movement, I would have some questions like why we're protesting pipelines when, you know, the pipelines were already approved. Maybe we shouldn't have done that. Or the fact that, like, you know, oil pipelines are better for the environment and safer than transporting these materials on trains. Or, you know, the idea that plastic has a lower carbon footprint than glass and wood. Like, I would sometimes see these contradictory facts, but my ideology and identification was so tied up in the group that when I would see those things, I would push them away. That all changed when I left my last job where I'd been in a visible role as a climate influencer, and I lived through COVID and I had my first son. And I think those two experiences of living through COVID and seeing the entire world shut down, plastic proliferated everywhere, but it was like not a big deal. And then our carbon emissions only dropping by maybe 5%. Maybe it was like 20% at its peak, but barely making a dent in our climate emissions, even though the world was shut down. And that's when I started to think, what is the climate movement wanting from us? Because if they want to get our emissions down to zero, that would require destroying our way of life. Then I read a book, Apocalypse Never, by Michael Schellenberger, who's a former green activist, and then Steve Koonin, who's a scientist who worked for President Obama. He wrote a book called Unsettled, and it went into all the things that we don't understand about climate change. And it made me realize that this climate narrative, this black and white thinking that I was pushing, that climate change was an existential threat and that the world was going to be destroyed by it, was not true, and that the truth was much more complex. Learning all this stuff, I went basically radio silent for 5 years, and I took a job behind the scenes at the Free Press, where I'm the head of social media, and I basically thought I would never be in front of the camera again, because I did not want to go against the group of pushing against the climate change narrative. It's such an entrenched ideology, and there was just no upside. But then this past spring, my younger son, I now have two boys that are almost four and almost two. My younger son turned one. And I think if you're a parent, you can understand this, like, or especially a mom. It was almost like when my younger son turned one, I kind of had a little bit more time to think about what I wanted to do with my life and what my values were. And I realized, like, I did not want to be on my deathbed one day having regrets of sitting on what was the truth because of fear. Overall, what I think about climate change now is this, that climate change is happening. If you define it as we're going through a warming period, we've actually been going through this warming period since the end of the Little Ice Age in the 1600s. Thomas Jefferson actually wrote about the climate getting warmer, which is a fun fact. You can look it up, because we're coming out of Little Ice Age. So we've seen warming consistently for the past 400 years. And in the last 150 years, we've seen 1.3 degrees of warming, which has coincided at the same time with the most human flourishing the world has ever known. So I don't think that this idea that warming is bad for humans can hold up to any scrutiny if you look at it honestly. And then at the same time, we're also releasing CO2 into the atmosphere by burning fossil fuels, which is oil, coal, natural gas. And the increase in CO2, we've seen global greening go up by 15 to 20% in some areas. We've seen plants have better growing seasons because CO2 is a plant food, if you remember from biology class. And so this idea that CO2 is inherently bad, I also kind of call bullshit on, or I do call bullshit on. And I've, from this time, read a lot of climate realist and climate skeptic books and realized that there's a really healthy movement out there of climate skeptics who unfortunately have been censored and maligned. A lot of them have been kicked out of their jobs for reporting on the truth, and it's really sad. And so the goal with my content and my page is to help bridge the gap between this information that's out there in the climate skeptic realist community and then the more mainstream social media space, because I'm a social media person and I love to make things go viral. I love to talk on camera and make short form videos. And so that's what my page is about. It's just spreading information that's already out there, but maybe you have not seen it because of your media sources. And ultimately, my biggest why is the young people, because young people have been taught this in school now for over a decade, if not two decades. if not more, honestly. And it's led to a mental health crisis. Young people are reporting having this sort of nihilism about their futures. They don't want to have kids. They're afraid. They think that modern society and capitalism, all these things, and fossil fuels, of course, are the downfall of our civilization, when it's kind of the opposite is true. And that we live in a really abundant, safe, prosperous time, and humans have never had more choice than they do now. So this idea that climate change is dangerous and that our systems are causing it, I want to throw it all out. And that's the point of this, is I want people, young people, to have the full context. We're safer than ever. We're more prosperous than ever. Climate change isn't dangerous. And there isn't a consensus on how much of it we can even control. And if the solutions like solar and wind even work. So that's me. I'm Lucy. Follow along if you're interested in this type of content. And thank you for everyone who's here.
How good was that? How good was that? In 5 minutes, she destroyed the whole thing, and probably as concise and easy to understand a position statement as I think I've ever heard. She broke everything down there. And I would add to that what I tell you all the time, too. It is an unprovable theory. You just cannot prove what would have happened anywhere in our country, in our world, had humans never put foot on the planet. We don't know. It might be exactly the way it is today. But there's someone who was part of that whole thing, was one of the true believers in climate change, and basically now thinks the whole thing is a hoax. So she said, and I think this is a key differentiator too, she said, I'm a believer in climate change, the way climate change should be defined, but not the grift, not the enterprise, the business opportunity. And it was just really, really well done. All of these whatever emissions and all the burning of the coal, oil, natural gas, and 1 degree over the last whatever. And there's good things that happen when we have carbon dioxide in the air. So I thought that was really good. Her name is Lucy Biggers, and she is part of the website and social media platform called The Free Press. Barry Weiss, who we were talking about in the CBS conversation earlier, is part of that same group as well. Kind of center-right, I would say, but they try to be really center. But really good stuff there, and I sure appreciated her comments. It was the best thing I heard all day. When we come back, a man who's been investigated by the Biden regime more than Donald Trump. That's next. We were talking about media earlier in our program, and my friend Liz Collin from Alpha News is on the lookout for kind of this media bias in the Twin Cities. And she put out a post yesterday that commented on what the Minnesota Star Tribune had been doing in their news coverage. And she said, it's important to note how the Star Tribune phrases this story. And the headline on the Star Tribune social media account, we were talking with Ike about this. It's not just what your story is, but what your headline says. Star Tribune has this headline. Bystander video obtained by the Minnesota Star Tribune shows agents tackle and pin Alex Preddy to the ground in a violent encounter more than a week before his death. The video that we're talking about here is the video that got released yesterday from the BBC showing Alex Preddy, who has been labeled by many on the left to be a peace-loving, genuine human being who loves everyone and just wanted to make a difference in the world. Well, this video that came out yesterday showed that a week before he was killed by ICE agents, unfortunate, absolutely, but a week before that happened, Alex Preddy was caught on camera, and the families confirmed it was him, kicking out the taillights on an ICE vehicle, swearing and spitting at officers. And that video comes out, and everybody who saw it is going, oh, my word. The story continues to change with this guy, doesn't it? It's no longer a story of just a guy who just wanted to do some good for the world and wouldn't hurt a flea. He was trying to help a woman. Well, obviously, this guy was a frequent flyer. He knew where to go to contact law enforcement, to get in the way of ICE and vandalize and damage, screaming the F-bomb and everything else at these ICE officers. And so thank you, Liz Collin, for being on the lookout. And isn't that something the Star Tribune chose to say the video obtained shows agents tackle and pin him to the ground. They don't say anything about why, because the ICE agents were driving away when he screamed and shouted and kicked out their taillight. Then they came after him, wrestled him to the ground, and apparently injured him. So apparently this guy knew where ICE was on a fairly regular basis and was a repeat harasser. And should he be dead today? Well, that was his choice, to get in the middle over and over and over again. And that time, too, the earlier video showed that he had a gun with him then, too. So I feel like this guy honestly had a death wish of some kind. All right, we are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Ivan Raiklin. And Ivan is a speaker, former Green Beret. And Ivan is going to be in town in Fargo Friday, February 20th at the Avalon Event Center, presented by Fargo Area Conservatives. And he'll be sharing his deep state target list and show how a group of bad actors threatens to undermine our republic. Ivan, good morning. Thank you for joining me today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Absolutely.
You got it. So,
Northern Virginia.
Okay. Well, we're in a northern United States where it's about 3 degrees below zero right now. So hopefully Northern Virginia's a little bit more friendly as far as the temperatures go for you today. Thank you for joining me.
15 degrees, man. Yeah.
Let me know a little bit about, let us know what you're going to be talking about when you get together with a lot of our friends and neighbors here on February 20th.
Well, usually when I give my speeches, I tailor it to providing updates on what's going on nationally, because I have a pretty broad network within decision makers, within the legislative branch and the executive branch at the federal level, and then tying it into the state that I'm in. So here, obviously, North Dakota, and then specifically the county, to give actionable items of what you can do that's pretty fairly simple that can have that national impact. That's generally the broad theme, and it's going to be tailored based on what the current national conversation is. So
okay.
I can't really tell you what it's going to be specifically, other than the theme will likely be joining forces with me to what I like to call castrate the deep state and then crush the commies globally.
Mm. Oh, well, we like that. So give me a sense of your background and how you got to be as qualified as you are to speak truth to people at those high levels. Tell us about your story.
Yeah, so I spent a quarter of a century in the national security arena as a Green Beret intel officer at the tactical operational strategic levels, countering ISIS, Taliban, MS-13, Russian aggression, you know, the whole works that have been going on over the last 25 years. And as part of that, I did serve as a military diplomat briefly in the Republic of Georgia. But I would say that I'm an insider that understands the insider baseball game within the intelligence community and the national security space. But then in addition to that, while I wasn't on active duty, I picked up a law degree to focus on national security law and constitutional law. And when I observed what occurred in 2020, and it's funny how we're talking today with the recent raid yesterday on Fulton County, everything playing out now, I was probably one of the first ones, maybe one of the key individuals motivating and ensuring that the fraudulent, illegal, COVID-induced election would be exposed. And I've never bent the knee since then. So not only am I an insider within our national security ecosystem down to the individual name level, I also had a front row seat going back to 2014 on why you had the auto pen pardoning folks back to 2014, meaning I was on the Ukraine crisis team in the Pentagon observing what's now playing out and that has been exposed by the Oversight Committee, whether it's James Comer or Judiciary Jim Jordan, et cetera. So every kind of phase of the escalatory coup that we've witnessed since 2014 against the constitutional order, I've had a front row seat, and I've yet to bend a knee on any of it, whether it's the COVID op, whether it's the illegal election, the 2020 election heist, and whether it's the January 6th Nancy Pelosi-led Fed insurrection and its subsequent cover-up. I've identified all the key players involved in that down to the name, date, place, and transgression and the link analysis as it relates to each of them.
So the 2020...
And I just present it publicly and try to get our institutions to catch up to then create consequences for them.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we need. So 2020 election and January 6th, it feels like to most of us on the conservative side, it feels like, okay, it's done and gone. It's been buried. Nobody cares anymore. And there will never be justice. There will never be the truth that will come out about either of those. It's kind of the same story, but it's kind of two pieces to it. Can you give us hope, Ivan, that there will someday be a reckoning on both of those stories?
So as long as you see me involved and publicly facing involved in this endeavor, that means I have no faith in our Republicans to be able to counter the Democrats. And that's why I'm involved, because they continue to be cowards. And in spite of the Republicans that are currently controlling the federal White House, the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate, they have not exhibited any sufficient courage to go ahead and counteract the treasonous Democrat terrorists. And so that's why it requires people like me, like you, and others that are not part of the what I like to call the lemming Republican class or the normie Republican class. They're not cut out for actually saving the Republic. Now, it's an open invite. If you're a normie Republican and you want to get out of that slumber of cowardice, then by all means, I'd like to see you at the event. But if you're not exhibiting or have exhibited courage over the last 6 years, you can go ahead and sit back and watch from your home as we take over our institutions and autocorrect this republic back to what it's supposed to be.
Okay, but President Trump would have...
liberty-minded republic.
Yeah, President Trump would have more purpose than anybody to try to have the story get straightened out about the 2020 election and January 6th. But you're saying that Republicans are not doing the job of trying to make anything happen. Why do you think you're not seeing the president get involved to the extent that you'd like to see him get involved?
While the president is motivated on those two specific issues, the problem I think for him is that the Republicans, whether it's Mike Johnson or Jim Jordan or some of the other key individuals that create great content for the people to, you know, carnival bark at, they create no consequences. In addition, his very own attorney general has provided she's winless thus far in any of the indictments. She hasn't even arrested really a single person other than a patsy that they're trying to convince us was the pipe bomber for January 5th. I was at a hearing yesterday. Additionally, as this investigation continues, it will start to expose those in his very inner sanctum and circle that were also complicit in not only the illegal 2020 election, but then the subsequent January 6th Fed surrection. And it's going to lead all the way up to Mike Pence and his involvement. And when you start to dig into the COVID op, you will start to see Jared Kushner's fingerprints all over that, along with others that are still in this White House. So that's kind of the dynamic. I go into 8K pixel details with receipts explaining how that is. And with the few minutes that we have, that's kind of the top line assessment.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Are you hopeful that by the time President Trump leaves office, that we will have the truth that will rise to the surface on those two big storylines?
I think the truth has already been out by the independent investigators like myself. We are compelling this House to see it also. I mean, I don't know if you saw last week the confrontation that Mr. Fanone, the key witness for the Fed surrectionist Pelosi and company, tried to confront me in a break at the Jack Smith hearing. That was essentially the manifestation of a truth seeker and a truth teller confronting the Democrat narrative as the Republicans just sat in the corner not wanting any of the truth to come out, because their complicity will also be exposed. And so they're playing this role of a limited hangout so that Cassidy Hutchinson and her relationships with certain members of Congress aren't exposed, because she could use that as leverage if they push too hard on her. And I mean, it all goes back to the Epstein files as well. I mean, a lot of the names that will be listed squarely are within the inner sanctum and circle of friends of President Trump, as described by Marjorie Taylor Greene. So if you're about truth over party, then please come on.
Yeah,
come visit and hear me speak.
Yeah, thank you, Ivan. Great to visit with you, and we appreciate you continuing to do that work to draw attention to the truth. If you, my friend, want to join Ivan and the team at Fargo Area Conservatives on that evening. You can. It's February 20th. But go to FargoConservatives.com. You can find out more about their organization and how to buy tickets. Ivan, thank you for your time. Great to meet you today.
Thank you.
Ivan Raiklin is his name. Yeah, February 20th, Avalon Event Center. Well, it doesn't do any good to apologize or try to make the radicals like you. They won't. That's next.
All right, I want to say thanks to all of you who contacted me after the show yesterday telling you how much you enjoyed hearing that column from the pastor in Roseville down in the suburban Twin Cities, not Minneapolis, but Roseville, one of the northern suburbs there. And a couple of people said, I didn't catch his name, or I caught it partway through. Will you read it again? I will try to do that. I don't have enough time to get to that today, but I'll do that again because I think it's pretty timeless. One of those evergreen thought lines I think you can bring back anytime. And it was Pastor Andy Secord is his name. And so we'll read that again sometime when we got a little bit more time. But thanks for the comments on that. A really great conversation and really got me thinking about how faith and politics come together or don't. And in my case, I kind of like to keep them separate, but it's getting harder and harder to do that. And Pastor Andy, I think, has me nudging toward thinking about them more together. So thank you to Pastor Andy. We'll read that again one of these days coming up soon. We've got a minute. All right, let's get to some text messages that have come in here. Steve, I was listening to your show yesterday, and I was really offended when you talked about the 350 Lutherans in Moorhead that are all Trump haters. I would agree that they are Trump haters, but what I want you to differentiate is that all Lutherans are not under the same tent. There's Missouri Synod, Wisconsin Synod, very conservative, ELCA, ALCA, and maybe more. What I want you to find out is which Lutherans are these and explain it to the public. There's a big difference. This should be brought out in your show and an apology to assume they are all one. We are not all big tent Lutherans. If you do not bring this up on your show tomorrow, I will proceed a different avenue. Everyday listener, like your show. Okay. I'm not sure what the different avenue is, but fair. And if I did say all Lutherans are Trump haters or all Lutherans don't want law enforcement, or if I implied anything close to that, then mea culpa in a big way. That's not how I feel. I find that more often than not, it seems like if you are finding someone of the faith who is more anti-Trump, anti law enforcement, removing people, it tends to be people from the Lutheran religion, faith system, denomination, I guess is the word I'm looking for there. But you're right that there's a different varieties there, and you can't lump everyone together. I know better than that. And if I implied that, certainly apologies on that. I don't believe that everybody there was Lutherans, 350 people. There's, you know, this pastor from the United Church of Christ, I don't really know the theology there, but there's a fair amount of, you know, we love all people, and which is true, but I think there's a condoning of lifestyle things sometimes there that I have trouble with. So a fair point, and I will try to remember to be a little more careful in my wording there. I don't think everybody there was religious at all. And again, I don't want to rip these people because these are people that are being trained not to get involved like we saw with Preddy and Good. These are people that are going to just document. I have no problem with that. But it's just interesting to me that it happens to be held at a Lutheran church over in Moorhead. Like, you can't make it up. And so, again, not to stereotype, but it sure seems to fit what I would have expected if I had to expect anything. So how's that? Steve, you have to apply your own logic to answer the question about Minneapolis. They honestly believe they are making it better because they hate Donald Trump. Well, I guess that's true. I would just ask people if this is really the hill you want to die on. Is your hatred for Donald Trump going to be the thing that you want to define who you are, your belief system, and what you choose to get engaged about? So you're right. They do believe they're doing the right thing. They do believe that this is a virtuous and even somewhat moral-based war because they, you know, my pastor says we're all born with a God-shaped hole in our heart, and we're going to try to fill it with something. So thank you to that. Good morning, Steve. Have you thought about reaching out to Paul Allen and offering him a position at the Flag? It's disgusting that he was put on leave for speaking the truth about paid protesters. Yes. Well, Paul, I don't think is going anywhere. He's not going to get fired. He's not going to lose his job with the Vikings. But my sense is he was probably shamed pretty good and had to apologize. I think he's taken a week off, just kind of let all this die down. I would say this to Paul, that, look, don't apologize to the radical left for anything, because they don't care. You're not going to win favor with them unless you completely quit what you're doing and you say, I've completely changed who I am and I'm going to do it differently and I hate Donald Trump too. Unless you do that, they won't forgive you. So this isn't going to make it better. I have learned that over time. All right, my friend, that's going to do it for the show today. Have a great day. Appreciate you listening to the program. Have a great day and keep on flying that flag.